We are not messing around, wasting no time. Our first guest today is the Lieutenant Governor of Connecticut, Susan Vaisowitz. Welcome back to WICC.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it is 100% my pleasure. And you and I haven't spoken since the election. So first and foremost, congratulations on the re-election. You know, given the state of the economy at the time, the high inflation, which, again, is a national thing, but, you know, I was nervous for you guys. I really was, knowing Bob Stefanowski had been campaigning for 4 years, you know, talking about crime being rampant, which we now know definitely isn't now that we've seen all the reports and everything. But I was a little bit nervous. But given all the things maybe you could hold against the Democrats, this state overwhelmingly decided for 4 more years for you and Ned Lamont.
Well, we were nervous, too, which is a good thing because nervous motivates you, right?
Yeah.
And it was very, very gratifying that the people of Connecticut did, I believe, give us a mandate for continuing the job that we've done. They were happy that we had 4 balanced budgets with a middle class tax cut, and that we had paid now down $7 billion of our pension debt so that we could further invest in our state. So we, the governor and I, feel very, very privileged to have 4 more years to work on behalf of the people of Connecticut. And we're looking forward to January 4th, which is the day that we officially get sworn in with our new oath of office and begin our work again.
Now, I noticed, I saw the schedule of events. You get sworn in at 10 o'clock in the morning before everybody
That's
else
right.
does. Why is that? How does that work out?
So I like to say that I'm the Kamala Harris of Connecticut. So I am the person who presides over the state Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to take the oath so that I can open the state Senate session, and the senators will be sworn in. And then I will go to the armory along with the governor and the other constitutional officers, and I will have a ceremonial swearing in with the other two, but it's because I have official
okay.
duties that require me to start earlier. The others will get the oath approximately at noon at the state armory.
All right. I understand your role, but all right. So you get sworn in, and then I assume all of our state reps and state senators, everybody takes their oath between 10
That's
and
right.
noon, and then we're off to.
That's right.
Okay. Oh, that is.
Yep.
How excited are you for that day? That's got to be. I mean, it seems like a lot of work, but obviously it's like a big victory lap. So that's got to be fun.
Look, we're very excited to start, and it's that fresh start, and it's also the opportunity to see all of our supporters at the armory. And I'll tell your listeners that. It's first come, first serve. You don't need any tickets, so anyone can come to the armory at noon to see us get sworn in. It'll all happen pretty quickly. We are going to have an inaugural celebration at the Bushnell the evening of January 4th, and it's going to feature Connecticut talent like Kevin Bacon and his band, and it's going to feature wine and beer made in Connecticut and some Connecticut foods. So we're looking forward. That's going to be fun. But after January 4th, we'll be back to work making sure that we can balance the budget and hopefully give a middle class tax cut, because the governor has been talking about reducing the tax rate for families that make $150,000 or less, and for individuals who make $75,000 or $80,000 or less. Don't take these numbers as gospel
mm-hmm.
yet, because the governor has just started to think about and prepare for a middle class tax cut. But all of it does depend on support from the legislature, which, you know, there are many legislators on both sides of the aisle who would like to see income tax cuts.
I was just talking to Bob Duff last week. As a matter of fact, Matt Ritter will be on later this hour. I was definitely going to ask both of those gentlemen. I did ask Bob about it last week, and he says he's very much looking forward to seeing what Governor Lamont puts in front of them, which, again, is great news for everybody here in Connecticut, especially for people who did not support the Lamont-Bicewicz ticket, who are under the impression that Connecticut's all about taxing the heck out of people. You guys made it a point, really, to get Connecticut's financial house in order, and you have done an amazing job of that. It looks like we're even going to see yet another surplus as this fiscal year comes to an end. So, I mean, just absolutely, I told you last time we talked, Lieutenant Governor, you I felt great about. Ned Lamont, he seems like a nice guy, a little goofy for my liking, but I thought, can you really run a state like a businessman would? And yes, the answer, I think maybe because of Donald Trump, I was concerned about what a businessman would do running something. But my goodness, I guess if you're in your right mind, the things you can do, I mean, the turnaround by this state financially is, it's got to be unprecedented. It really does. Again, to be in a position where, you know, he's now talking about a tax cut for families, that's amazing.
You know, we are so grateful to be able to do this. And one of the things we found out is, Joe, when we were out talking to voters kept saying to us, please keep paying down the debt, because voters understand, just like you have a mortgage, you can't stop paying the mortgage. And sometimes when you have a little extra money, you can pay down the principal, which saves you money on interest, right?
Right.
So people really understood that and said, please keep going with that. And we also heard from people that they would like to see more middle class tax cuts, which is why the governor is now proposing cutting the tax rate for those middle-class families that make $150,000 per family, or 76,000 individually. So that's what our focus will be on. But I think two other things that we will focus on are affordable housing and workforce development, because as we look at the economy, we see that there are 100,000 unfilled jobs, and we want to get people trained so that they can get those good paying jobs. And if we're going to continue to grow our economy, and it is growing, you know, the United States government budget included an additional $5 billion for more nuclear subs to be built in eastern Connecticut. Mm-hmm. We're going to need more people, and we need more places for people to live. So that's those two things are workforce development, job training, and affordable housing are things we're going to be focusing on in addition to the tax cuts that I just talked about.
I love it. Big thank you to Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz for joining us. Lieutenant Governor, so many people are off this week, and I really appreciate you coming on the radio. I'm sure you got a lot going on with the holiday, like everybody else does. So I really do appreciate you giving us the time today.
Oh, my pleasure. It's nice to be back on your show.
Oh, you're so awesome. All right. A few weeks ago, I talked to Jacqueline Rabe Thomas from Hearst Media. She did some really in-depth research on the housing crisis, especially as it pertains to renters. The Section 8 vouchers that a lot of towns are giving out are only being used at about a 50% clip, just because there's such low inventory and what is available is kind of out of their price range.
Right.
What exactly can we do, especially in the short term, to alleviate this issue?
Well, a number of things. First of all, our administration just announced over $13 million in small cities grants to seven different municipalities to refurbish and expand housing in places like Griswold, Litchfield, Naugatuck, Seymour, Suffield, Vernon, smaller communities that have public housing stock that needs upgrading and needs expanding. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that we are now doing is we are investing in housing that is a mixture of market rate and lower income, so that you have beautiful housing that is affordable, but that's also market rate, and that's near public transportation, which is important. And also many of these mixed-use developments of affordable and market rate housing also has a retail or business component too, so that you'll see small businesses, you know, on the first floor of the building, and then you'll see residential units above for a mix of people. And that's really what we need. We need more affordable housing, but we need more housing generally, because during the pandemic, people realized how safe our state was, and they flocked mm-hmm. from the New York area, from the Boston area. So when we have a census that's showing, you know, 60,000 new families, that means there's many fewer apartments, rental units, and homes for people to either rent or buy. So we're really going to be focusing on building more affordable housing for people, because we know it's been very difficult, especially for folks with Section 8 vouchers.
So I'm a real estate agent in my spare time, not that I have much spare time, mm-hmm. you know, and I mean, it's interesting because it's a good problem that we're having. The price of houses right now is pretty high. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's a matter of, we have a lot more people that want to be here than people who were leaving this state. And I think there's a misperception, particularly for people to the right, who seem to think that everyone's flocking down south. And that is just not the case. This is a very desirable place to live.
People rediscovered how beautiful our state is. We know it because we live here. So we know that, depending on where you live, it's not more than a half hour, or even depending on some spots, an hour to get to a beautiful beach. We have mountains. We have beautiful parks. We have great places to live. The shoreline towns, as you know, are very popular. And so it is a good problem to have. I mean, I live in Middletown. I look at the value of my home, you know, when I go on Zillow and I can see it's way up, you know, am I thrilled that I just got a letter from the city of Middletown saying, hey, now your house is valued more. So great, I get to pay more property right. taxes. But so we know that we need more housing for people in our state. And our administration is going to be focusing on creative ways to build more affordable housing, to make sure we have both town, state, and private investment at the same time. Because when you leverage private sector dollars, that's always really great for job creation and for our economy. And look, I hope that we do this because I want to make sure that our kids, when they come back from college, can afford to live in our state. That's the challenge.
I don't know if you saw the article Ken Dixon wrote in the Connecticut Post last week, but the drop in crime in Connecticut in the last decade is mind-blowing. 35% mm-hmm. decrease in property crimes. Again, just speaking to how safe this state is. And, you know, I think outside of October and the shooting of those Bristol police officers, which I think, shook up a lot of people in light of, you know, what was going on with the catalytic converters and some of the car theft. There was a sense of like, wow, this is crazy, all the crime. But I think we're just more aware of crime just because there's more cameras out there. But again, to see the numbers, Connecticut is, if I'm not mistaken from his reporting, it is the lowest crime state in the country. It is amazing how safe this state is compared to most other states.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll tell you that although some politicians, Bob Stefanowski included, tried to make crime the biggest issue, that's not what we were hearing from the voters. The economy was the biggest issue. The fiscal management of our state was a big issue for people. And so we're glad that the voters have given us another 4 years. Having said that, I'll say that our cities are on track to unfortunately have more homicides this year. That is very disturbing, and we have to work on that. And the other thing that I think is very disturbing is the number of pedestrian deaths and injuries. So that's going to be something that I know the legislature and our Department of Transportation is going to be focusing on, because people are driving really fast, especially post-pandemic. Yeah. And we want to make sure that our cities and towns are walkable, because that promotes economic development. And we want to make sure that people are safe when they're out walking and visiting our beautiful communities.
Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz, again, thank you for your time. Already back to work just days after Christmas, where, again, I think everybody else is still kind of sitting it out. They got another week to go before January 4th, and here you are already laying it all out there for us. I really appreciate your time. Happy New Year. Happy Inauguration Day. And best of luck to you and Ned Lamont in your second term.
Thank you so much for having me. Look forward to further conversation.
Same here. Thank you so
much. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz, always appreciate her time. Aligned by House Speaker Matt Ritter. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you? Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. I know you're heading back from visiting family, so appreciate you giving us some time today. And happy holidays to you and yours. So let me ask you, Matt, I know you still got a few days off here until the new session begins. But once things get underway on January 4th, what do the Democrats have on the agenda for this upcoming session?
Yeah, I mean, it's first thing we got to think about when you get into a new session in the odd years is the next biennium budget. What's the budget going to be for next 2 years? And, you know, we've had a lot of conversations about continuing some of the middle class tax cuts that we've had. Governor's talked about potentially an income tax reduction. So it's all interesting stuff. But for me, the budget conversations don't begin till we re-up the five-year bond covenants, which is what put the state in the fiscal position that it is in today, was the bipartisan budget of 2017. I was proud to be majority leader during those negotiations. And those covenants expire. We have to re-up those so we have the fiscal discipline, which has allowed us to have a full rainy day fund to offer these tax cuts last year and hopefully going forward.
So, Matt, I literally was just talking to Lieutenant Governor Bicewicz last half hour, and she mentioned how much the governor is looking forward to hopefully getting some middle-class tax cuts passed. I talked to Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff last week. He said he was very hopeful to see what got put on his desk. What exactly is it, though, that might cause a hang-up as far as a middle tax cut? Because I got to say, and I was just telling Lieutenant Governor Bicewicz, the turnaround that this state has made with the books is amazing. I mean, this state went from being in some fiscal trouble to, like, boy, we are just like rolling in the dough right now. It's amazing.
Yeah, but, you know, I go back to what I said. So before we talk about a budget, before anyone starts talking about numbers with me, I want the fiscal stability and the fiscal predictability that comes with locking in certain figures. So when I talk about these bond covenants, the main one that whatever we budget for in income taxes, Any money above that number goes to two things and two things only. One is to make sure our rainy day fund is full, which it currently is, and two is to prepay our long-term liabilities, our pension funds that were grossly underfunded for many years. So once you do that, there shouldn't be any hang-ups, except it's a matter of figuring out how much you have in terms of revenue surplus on top of those numbers I just mentioned, than what you can spend under our state spending cap. But I think the good news is the numbers look like we'll have about $500 million or so we can provide in tax relief, very close to the number we provided last year.
Well, that is outstanding. We're talking to Connecticut Speaker of the House, Matt Ritter, selected to a second term as Speaker. Matt, again, I really do appreciate you giving us some time. I know this is a week that most people are vacationing, and we just had a chance to talk to the Lieutenant Governor, who was talking about getting back to work, and I know you're driving back, again, kind of in that same mindset of getting back to work. And we were just talking about crime, which is on the decline, with the exception of we're seeing higher homicide rates in the cities. And Lieutenant Governor Bicevich mentioned the pedestrian deaths. We're seeing a lot of those. And she suggested maybe that's something the legislature can look at. Is there something you guys think you can address about one or both of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the Transportation Committee has looked at created this major task force with recommendations coming back next month. One of the big things they're looking at is allowing towns more ability to regulate speed limits. I don't think people know, but a lot of roads are actually controlled by the state. And so that's one of the big things they're going to look at. And that might lead to some more local safety improvements, where I think the thought process is local government may know best, the local public works director may know best about how to address that. You know, but in terms of crime, I mean, look, you know, we saw the spike during the pandemic with stolen cars. I think people responded well in terms of taking safety precautions, being mindful of that. But look, we're at the end of the day, we're always going to, you know, in cities, you know, we're always mindful of what's going on there. I know in Hartford that I represent, so we're seeing pretty high levels. A lot of it is targeted, doesn't excuse it. It's just really, it's hard when you talk to police officers to understand how two social media posts lead people to be so angry they go and shoot each other. So a lot of this is just personal disputes, which is, it's hard to track. It's not an excuse, but it really is sad, you know, how things escalate so quickly, lead to people killing each other over something that literally, they tell me, some of the time just starts right on Facebook.
Well, that is pretty stunning. I live in Weathersfield, Matt, so, you know, again, I don't feel like it's again, it's right next door to where I live, and I'm not feeling like, oh boy, things aren't safe over here. It does tend to be targeted, and a lot of times gang related, where again, pretty targeted. The Republicans tried to make that a big issue during the election. I don't know that anybody bought it. And again, now to kind of see the numbers, especially property crimes are so low. You know, Connecticut is a very safe state. And despite what was being said during the election, you know, accusing the Democrats of being pro-criminal, I'm glad that that didn't resonate at all with voters, because it's kind of silly.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the governor made a good comment during the campaigns, which is that, you know, when a crime happens to you or someone in your family, right, that's hard, and nobody excuses that. And so I always try to be sympathetic and understand that, statistics being what they are, if it was your car stolen or, you know, your property stolen, you got to be sensitive to that as well. But I do think the fear-mongering, people didn't see that reality. People said, look, you know, we have to make sure that we have programs for children. We have ability for after-school programs. Sure that our laws reflect serious crimes, and making sure that people, you know, are punished for those accordingly. But also, our state, like a lot of red states, has realized that taking a 14-year-old kid makes one mistake and locking him or her up for 2 years, that's not a good answer either. So I think most Connecticut voters are sophisticated enough to see the nuances there, didn't kind of buy into the fear-mongering that you might have saw, you know, Bob Stefanowski campaign on.
Yeah. We are talking to Connecticut House Speaker Matt Ritter. Matt, obviously we approved early voting on November the 8th. Have you guys had any discussions at all as to what that might look like?
No, I mean, yes, I should say that. Yes, of course. We've been talking about it for years. You know, once we knew this was going to be on the ballot, I think what I've seen so far is encouraging, right? I was worried that some people were talking about 60 to 90 days early voting, and I do not support that. I think elections have to mean something. Campaigns have to mean something. Mm-hmm. So you got to, you know, let candidates go out there and make their case, and things happen late in elections. We've seen that, particularly on the presidential side. So I think most people, a 14 to 21-day window prior to Election Day, and I think the registrars and the town clerks have also reminded us that they don't have the resources to staff something for, say, 2 months. We want this to be done safely in a way that is economically feasible, and I think the numbers we're talking about reflect that. But you know, we'll have public hearings. We'll hear it all out. But I suspect you'll see something like 2 or 3 weeks, maybe 4 or 5 days as options at your local town hall or something like that.
Okay, that sounds good. My own personal thought was I think 10 days or less. You know, I feel like this is I think that gives everybody a chance, and especially having a whole weekend before the election. To me, if you can't make the time in there, maybe you're not exactly someone who should be voting. Kind of was my thought, but I'm glad to hear that we're not going to get. I think Pennsylvania has like 50 days. That's insane. That is too much. And again, I think, like you said, things happen in elections. We obviously saw what happened with their Lieutenant Governor Fetterman having had a stroke. I imagine a lot of people that had cast a ballot might have been like, oh, geez, not that Dr. Oz was going to be a better option. But, you know, I think you don't want to have to regret a vote. And I think that's obviously something that has to be kept in mind. So I'm glad you guys are talking about that. Last thing I want to ask you about, there is a lot of jobs available in this state. And we just saw the budget that got passed, $1.7 trillion. I know a lot of money is coming to Connecticut to build some subs. Lieutenant Governor Bicewicz and I were just talking about job training. Is that something that we can invest in here in this state so that we can help people get trained for some of these great jobs that are going to be coming to Connecticut?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. Yes, there's no doubt that we can do a better job. The way that EB has probably one of the most successful programs. They still can't find enough people. It's about going into high schools, making the case, letting people, you know, learn when they're still in high school, get certain, you know, apprenticeship programs going. But there's more we can do to match employers, employees, I think. And I think, you know, we're working on that, particularly in the advanced manufacturing. The second thing, though, is got to have young people live here, right? A lot of these jobs are, as people retire, the next generation. And Connecticut's an expensive state to live in. Have to continue to find ways to make cities fun places to live for people, right? And so you've seen Hartford build almost 3,000 units. They're all occupied, and it shows you there's a demand for that. So you got to make sure we continue to invest in our Hartfords, our New Havens, our Bridgeports, where people can live, and also make sure we have housing that's affordable for folks, daycare that's affordable, you know, good quality schools, because I think people have rediscovered Connecticut after the pandemic. They may not want to do New York anymore. They may not want to do New Jersey anymore. We got to make sure we're that alternative to them, even after the pandemic has now kind of run its course.
That is fantastic to hear. Connecticut House Speaker Matt Ritter. Matt, I really appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your holiday. We really appreciate you making some time to talk to us today, and we'll be in touch when the new session gets going.
Thanks for having me. Look forward to coming back, and happy holidays.
Same to you. Thank you so much.